former football hero gives a word of warning to his fellow football players with the Super Bowl coming and some wild stuff happening in Charlotte.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I had a fascinating conversation yesterday with Reverend James Robison in the second hour of my show, who not only spoke about what made Ronald Reagan great. James Robison was one of the Christian leaders who helped encourage Ronald Reagan to run to be president, but also talked about where the moral majority made some strategic missteps. Very, very interesting talk. You can listen to it. We put it on YouTube, the audio on YouTube. You can listen by going to Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org, and clicking on latest video. This is Michael Brown of the aforementioned askdrbrown.org. And if you'd like to join me in conversation today, the number to call, as always, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. There is never a dull moment in the political campaigns, and things have heated up today in many ways. I'm not going to focus on that, but I do want to make a few comments. Yesterday, I also gave a little talk. We'll put it up as a video at some point on five keys for a conservative Christian revolution. Five keys for a conservative Christian revolution. Friends, if we look primarily to a political leader, even someone as powerful as the president, if we look primarily to a political leader to turn the tide in the nation, we are mistaken. The tide must turn first and foremost with the people of God. The tide must turn first and foremost with awakening in us. And if I had to list our greatest problems in America, I would say the first and foremost problems are spiritual. Secondly, directly related to that, moral. And thirdly, all of the other things that flow out of that, be it economic, be it issues of security, or things like that. So we are ultimately responsible for the spiritual tone of the nation. As Dr. King said, the church is not the master of the state or the servant of the state, but the conscience of the state. We must be reminded of that. And then we get involved in the political process. That is part of it. And for me, seeing someone come to office who will radically do what is right and radically advocate for what is right. Again, I'm not looking for that person to be a pastor, a pope, or a priest, or to be the spiritual leader of the nation. I am looking for someone to do the right thing for the nation. Yeah, that person can make a great difference. But aside from the church, it's only going to go so far. And interestingly, what James Robison talked to me about was how the moral majority started with great goals and values, and James Robison was there from the beginning of it, was a friend of Jerry Falwell, but that the misstep was it became appended to a political party. Rather than just standing, this was his opinion, rather than just standing for certain principles, and based on those particular principles, each party could then benefit by working together with the moral majority. It ended up basically being an appendage of the Republican Party. Hence, you have this union which can become unhealthy and which can ultimately water things down. I do want to share with you a very, very interesting warning offered by Eugene Robinson, a former football great with the Atlanta Falcons. He's spoken this warning to the Carolina Panthers, who are going to the Super Bowl, as most of you know. And he is now a radio commentator, color commentator for the Panthers. If you don't know his story, it's eye-opening. I mean eye-opening. So we're going to talk about that. And, yeah, I'm just going to give you some updates on Donald Trump, Ted Cruz, Marco Rubio. And check out my latest article, Mr. Trump, What's Not Worth It? In fact, I think I'm going to read to you some comments that my wife Nancy had for Mr. Trump. We'll be right back.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, never a dull moment in the current political scene. I know it gets heated every 4 years. I don't quite remember it being this wild. This is Michael Brown, your voice of moral sanity and spiritual clarity. The number to call, 866-348-7884. I'll have an article, should go up tonight on the WorldNet Daily site. Is a vote for Trump today a vote for Hillary tomorrow? And in that, I look at some data, polling data, other information, information about the unlikability rating of Donald Trump right now, and look at other polls with other candidates, Marco Rubio, Chris Christie, Ted Cruz, which suggest that the candidate who has the least chance of defeating Hillary Clinton if she makes it to the nomination, which is very questionable, but the candidate who has the least chance of defeating her could well be Donald Trump. And the candidates, all the aforementioned candidates, Rubio, Christie, Cruz, all have a better chance of defeating her for a number of reasons. So it'd be very odd, ironic, even tragic, if people said, look, I don't agree with Donald Trump, but I'm voting for him because he's the only one that can beat Hillary, whereas he would be the worst one to beat Hillary. So by voting for him, you'd be helping her. So that's kind of wild. But that article will be coming out tonight. 866-34-TRUTH. All right. A lot of concern about alleged unethical conduct with the Ted Cruz campaign, saying that Donald Carson, a New Testament scholar, that Dr. Ben Carson had dropped out of the race. And at the Iowa caucuses, remember, you're talking to people, you're meeting, you're explaining why your candidate should win, and then people are voting. So there's more time to change opinions there than when you're just going in, standing on a line. And most time you're standing on a line, you're not arguing about who you're going to vote for or not. Sometimes you are, but, you know, people on the cell phones doing other things, you try to get in and out, you're really not thinking about it that much. Iowa caucus is different. So there's been a lot of criticism of the Cruz campaign that they knowingly spread false information that Ben Carson had dropped out and that people, instead of voting for him because he's not going to be running, should vote for Ted Cruz. And, of course, Dr. Carson, very upset about it. Ted Cruz spoke very honorably and graciously about Ben Carson and then apologized, said they had information that he was dropping out. They shared that, and they got the wrong information, and he apologized. So Ben Carson said, look, as Christians, we accept apologies, but there has to be some kind of accountability. And Ted Cruz has said, hold me accountable. I was at a meeting with a few hundred faith leaders towards the end of last year, December 29th in Texas, and he said, hold me accountable. If I tell you I'm going to do something, I want all of you in this room to hold me accountable. So here's what's interesting. And I just got this timeline that I've been reviewing. Are you ready? Just very, very interesting here. And next hour, I'm scheduled to have Rafael Cruz, Ted Cruz's father, on the phone with me. And I'm going to ask him, I don't know how much he got involved on inside information, but I'm going to ask him forthrightly, at any point, did your son's campaign knowingly spread false information about Ben Carson? Now, I'm pretty sure I know what the answer is to that. No, they didn't knowingly spread false information. However, the question is, at what point did they know information was going out? I mean, it's a total buzz going on. So I'll find out what I can from Rafael Cruz. But here's something very interesting. I was driving in the car today, and I heard Rush Limbaugh, Tom, I'm not normally in the car, and I heard him, and he said, actually, it seems that Carson's campaign is somewhat to blame, but it could be Rubio's campaign is to blame. I thought, what? What is that about? So here's the timeline. Are you ready? 6:29 Central Time. A very active Marco Rubio supporter sends out a tweet. I looked at it. It was since deleted. And it says that Ben Carson is dropping out, that this needs to be shared. This is someone supporting the Rubio campaign who sent this out at 6:29. Ben Carson is dropping out. Get the word out, obviously hoping it would help the Rubio campaign. 6:43 Central Time, 14 minutes later, CNN's Chris Moody says Carson won't go to New Hampshire, South Carolina, but instead will head home to Florida for some rest and relaxation. He'll be in D.C. Thursday for the National Prayer Breakfast. That was 6:43. Also 6:43, then Chris Moody says Ben Carson's campaign tells me, this is all via Twitter, he plans to stay in the race beyond Iowa no matter what the results are tonight. Then 6:44, CNN breaks the story on TV. So first it's tweeted out by Chris Moody, then broken at 6:44 p.m. Central Standard Time, CNN breaks the story. By the way, I was just sent a note that Rick Santorum is announcing he's dropping out of the campaign. Of course, Governor Huckabee has dropped out, and Rand Paul, Senator Paul, indicated earlier today he's dropping out. And I think it's good and right, and then we can really major on the majors with the candidates that are going to be in it for the long haul. So CNN broke the story and said it's highly unusual that someone is not going to show up in New Hampshire, and they're taking a few days off at this time. So they were drawing attention to the oddness of Dr. Carson's decision, but not saying that he was dropping out of the race. CNN then tweets the story at 6:50. Again, not that he's dropping out, but that he's taking time off. And then 6:56 is a press report, Carson to take break after email. This is the first email sent out by the Cruz team. So this is 6:56. Now remember, just a few minutes earlier, a Rubio campaigner has said Ben Carson's dropping out, get the word out. That's apparently where it starts. Then 14 minutes later, CNN's Chris Moody says Carson heading home to Florida for some rest and relaxation. He'll be in D.C. Thursday for the National Prayer Breakfast. And then a few minutes later, on TV, and then immediately tweeting out, well, he's going to stay in the race beyond Iowa no matter what. All right, so a Cruz email goes out 13 minutes after these stories are breaking. Press report, Carson to take break after Iowa. And it's dear whoever, breaking news, the press is reporting that Dr. Ben Carson is taking time off from the campaign trail after Iowa and making a big announcement next week. Please inform any Carson caucus goers of this news and urge them to caucus for Ted Cruz. All right? So they didn't say he was dropping off, but that he was taking time off from the campaign. That was accurate. And making a big announcement. I'm not sure where the big announcement part comes from. And then a text message goes out via Twitter at 7. And then 7:13, CNN reporting Ben Carson will stop campaigning after Iowa. Dear whoever, CNN is reporting that Ben Carson will stop campaigning after Iowa. Make sure to tell all of your peers at the caucus supporting Carson that they should coalesce around the true conservative who will be in the race for the long haul, Ted Cruz. And then Congressman Steve King, 7:20, tweets out, Carson looks like he is out. Iowans need to know before they vote. Most will go to Cruz, I hope. And then Chris Moody clarifies again, 7:30. Folks, Ben Carson is just making a brief stop at home in Florida tonight. Campaign says he'll be back on the campaign trail by Wednesday. All right, what's the bottom line? The bottom line is that some wrong information was sent out. Initially, accurately, that he was taking some time off, but then inaccurately, that he was dropping out. Whoever's responsible for that, I believe, has been held accountable, and Ted Cruz has publicly apologized. Did that affect the race a lot? I don't know that anyone's arguing except for Donald Trump wanting to have a re-election or something like that. Are there lessons for everyone involved? Are there implications for the Rubio campaign? I think they're clear lessons. I would say for Dr. Carson, obviously, anything that is perceived as weakness or double-mindedness or lack of resolve is going to work against him. Hey, he's not trying to be your typical politician. Let him be who he is. If he wants to go to Florida, get some new clothes, have some rest and relaxation before resuming, that's his prerogative. It will be interpreted in certain ways. Does the Cruz campaign need to be absolutely sure about the exact accuracy of anything sent out or said about others? Yeah, obviously. Hence the apology without excuses being made. You can understand how things happen. You see one tweet, you don't see the next, right? You see one news report, you don't see the next. I mean, that happens all the time. I can be sent something by a reliable source because they just heard it. I get it. My producer gets it. I spot it on my screen. I want to share it with you so you hear the news as it breaks. 10 minutes later, someone says, hey, we just found out that that story was incorrect. This is the story. So do you wait before you share the news? I mean, we always do our best to make sure it's vetted and accurate and clear. And most of the time, we're not just sharing something as it happens. But these things can happen. And hopefully, this will not happen again. But the idea that you're going to deduce from this, well, Ted Cruz is a liar, this one's a liar, that to me is utterly ridiculous. But if there are mistakes made, let's get them fixed, whoever made them, whatever camp they're in. All right, we'll be right back.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
It was just to tell these guys, man, don't mess this up, man. Don't mess this up. And I could be a living example. Don't mess this up.
Did you tell them about the day after? Facing your teammates?
No, this is what I told them. I said, I cried all night. Dude, I cried all night.
That was the voice of Eugene Robinson. If you live in Greater Charlotte, North Carolina, you hear him if you're listening to a Carolina Panthers game. He is one of the color commentators that you hear regularly, or the color commentator. And he is known as a committed Christian. If I remember, when he played with the Falcons, he had a nickname like the Prophet or something like that. And here it is, Super Bowl 33, the eve of Super Bowl 33, 1999. So we're about to have Super Bowl 50 this Sunday. 1999, Super Bowl 33. Eugene Robinson played in the Atlanta Falcons. He was a very good player, three-time Pro Bowl safety. All right, so like all-star level safety. And he said his primary values were faith, family, and football. But the night before the Super Bowl, he said he forgot all three. Now here's what makes this so ironic and such an important lesson for all of us. Are you ready? That day, the eve of Super Bowl 33 in 1999, he received the Bart Starr Award for outstanding character and leadership. Think of it. Out of all the players in the NFL, all the football players, he received the award for outstanding character and leadership. This is Bart Starr Award. Now, that night, he is arrested for soliciting sex with a prostitute. Okay, it was basically an undercover prostitute. He is arrested for soliciting sex. He gets that award. And that's what happens that night. And look, these players have everything thrown at their feet. None of us, unless you've been in that same situation, none of us can imagine the privilege they had, the women throwing themselves at their feet. Anything you want, there you have it. You are not just an athlete. You are an NFL football player. You're not just an NFL football player. You are going to the Super Bowl. You know what it says in 1 Corinthians 10:12, let him who thinks that he stand take heed lest he fall. So Eugene Robinson, to the total shock of the Carolina Panthers, has a meeting with them and says, I messed up. Don't do what I did. Don't do what I did. They had a free day in San Francisco the other day. Coach Rivera said, yeah, it concerns him some. But in other words, you could just get in trouble. We normal human beings can't relate to what it's like to be in those shoes and have those opportunities. And you think all these things about yourself and, hey, we've made it. Pride comes in. Pride's terribly dangerous. Terribly, terribly dangerous. So clip number six, listen to what Eugene Robinson had to say.
I've shared my story with different church groups and things of that nature, kind of advancing the gospel. But yeah, it was painful, man. I cried the entire night, that night, you know. And I'm like, how did I get way over here, when I was way over here, how did you get so far over there? Well, it's easy to lose your way when you're selfish and when you're thinking about yourself and that's the only thing that you're thinking about. And that's what I did, you know? And to hear the word solicitation is still painful for me. And I got to call it what it is. You know, I call it what it is. I don't try to sugarcoat it. I don't try to go ahead and say, you know, look, man, this is just me. It is. It is what it is. And that's what it is. It's called solicitation. That's what it was.
Yeah, and he's got to face his teammates. He gives up a big play the next day. The Falcons lose. How utterly humiliating. Think of it. Our sins will find us out. If we don't repent of those things, turn from them, have them under the blood, they could come back and haunt us. And even things we're forgiven of, they have consequences. One more clip. Just play number 7, a little bit more from Eugene Robinson. Clip number 7.
For me, as painful that is and as heartbreaking that it is and all that stuff, I'm like, that's a maturity process. That's a growing process. And I want my guys to know, because I love this team, that, hey, you got a great opportunity. A great opportunity. Go ahead and seize the moment. And don't, in this respect, be like me.
Yeah, what a lesson. I mean, he didn't have to bring that up. He didn't have to dredge that up and embarrass himself. But he knows it's more important to be a witness. But here's something important, because most of you listening are not professional athletes. Most of you listening are not going to be playing in the Super Bowl. I imagine the vast majority of those listening are not playing in the Super Bowl this coming weekend. I think it's an educated guess to say that. But we all have situations in which we feel good about ourselves and can get in the flesh. I once heard a minister say, your times of greatest attack after ministry will be after your greatest victory. I thought, that doesn't make sense. Because, you know, you get back to the hotel room, you're charged, you're excited, you're blessed. The Lord moved wonderfully. People got their lives turned around. You want to pray. You want to spend time with God. Yeah, true. But sometimes that's when the devil comes raging. And sometimes that's when you can start to feel good about yourself in the flesh. Hence, the warning is applicable to all of us. Let him who thinks that he stand take heed lest he fall. All right, I said I was going to read this to you. Let me just share what my dear bride of almost 40 years, Nancy, posted on Facebook. And then I put in my article, Mr. Trump, what is not worth it? He said he's the only one who's funding his campaign, tweeted this out the other day. He's the only one funding his campaign. He said, I don't believe I've been given any credit by the voters for self-funding my campaign. The only one I will keep doing, but not worth it. Well, that made me wonder, what did he mean? Others have been wondering what he meant. Here's what Nancy wrote. What's shocking is that one would expect that his claims for loving this country and wanting to make America great again would overshadow any other feeling he might have. My expectation for a presidential candidate would be one who thinks that it certainly is worth it, no matter how underappreciated they might feel. It's all worth it. Whatever the sacrifice might be, it's worth it. So many other candidates have been ridiculed, trashed, humiliated, yet they keep on going without complaining about the American people. Trump's statement shows tremendous weakness. Any individual working hard towards a goal who states it's not worth it, I mean, really, why would I want to support any candidate with that attitude, even if they keep on going? Running for the highest office in the land is not for the faint of heart. She then added, the thing that struck me about this particular comment of his was that it's the antithesis of strength, which is what he's touted for. It's the antithesis of a heart that is truly fighting for the cause. His dedication seems hollow. Even if he's willing to fund his own campaign, a true leader and dedicated fighter for the cause is not looking for the accolades of men. I think those are very, very fair points. And the reason I quoted them is because I thought Nancy really nailed it in what she had to say. All right, listen, friends, a lot of stuff is going on in Charlotte, and I want to share that with the whole nation, because this is another city that has been targeted by gay activists for radical change, and most of the people in the city, especially the Christians, have very little idea of what's going on. I'm going to get into that next hour, speak with Rafael Cruz. So to listen to the whole show later today, go to AskDrBrown.org and click on Latest Broadcast. While you're there, be sure to check out the latest offer. And remember, whoever you're voting for, Jesus is Lord. Let's unite around him.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Many of you heard about what happened in Houston last year, where the gay activist mayor of the city, Anise Parker, pushed through a bill, a quote, LGBT discrimination bill, part of it the infamous bathroom bill. She made clear this was personal, this was about her. And anyway, the city council pushed it through, even though there was overwhelming protest from voters. It ended up getting pushed for a vote in the city, and to the shock of many, the people of Houston voted very clearly that they did not want this happening in their city. Well, there was an effort to bring this to Charlotte, North Carolina last year, and it was defeated. It is coming right back, but in a more insidious way. And in the midst of all this, there's a major conference that's going to be taking place. So a lot happening. And I'm sitting here with Heather Garofalo. She's been married to her husband, Stephen, who's an apologist of the faith for 17 years. They've got three kids, live in Matthews, North Carolina, and have served as ambassadors to the Alliance Defending Freedom since 2004. Heather, welcome to the Line of Fire. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here, and hello to our listeners out there.
Wonderful. All right. Before we talk about the Rise Up Conference that's going to be taking place this Saturday in Charlotte, what is happening in terms of a bill, an ordinance that there's an attempt to push through, and is anybody behind it outside of Charlotte?
Sure. So last year, this same bill was attempted to go through. There were 10,372 people that signed against this bill. 1,000 were at the rally. 120 spoke out against. 120 spoke, and most of them were against. Only 26 were for. This bill is twofold. First of all, it is introducing language, including sexual orientation, gender identity, and gender expression as a protected class. The second piece of this bill is giving transgender people the opportunity to use the restroom of their choice.
All right, so in other words, when you've got gender identity and gender expression, so this is now a protected right, same thing as skin color, right? So that would mean then, if a man identifies as a woman, that he's able to use the ladies' bathroom, locker room in a public building if it makes all of them uncomfortable. Let's say he's a nice guy, he's not a predator or anything, but he's a man, identifies as a woman, so as visibly male as I am, identifies as a woman, maybe puts a wig on. He could, if this bill passes, use the ladies' restroom, ladies' locker room, and there's no recourse against it.
That is absolutely correct. And the challenge here is this is not even good for our transgender children. Let's take a sweet transgender child, a female, 12 years old, and suddenly we are falsely, with this ordinance, setting that child up to say, all the bullying that you've experienced with the females, if you go over to the male locker room, the male bathroom, you're suddenly going to be accepted. That bullying, that animosity is suddenly going to stop. That is not the case. We are setting up these children for sexual predators, not within the LGBT community, but sexual predators, tens of thousands of them around Charlotte. Now, the transgender population makes up about 1.8% of the population. If we're talking about equality, let's also look at 98% of the population, the other children. They then also would be going into a bathroom or a public restroom and be at the mercy of not the LGBT, but again, the sexual predators that are out there. It is the duty of the city of Charlotte to protect all children, our transgender, and all other children in the community.
Yeah, and even when you say 1.8%, when it was argued by activists last year on the transgender side, they put it way lower. They put it at 0.07%. Percent, so even lower for your 0.7%. But what we're basically saying is that for the sake of a few kids or individuals who are struggling, whatever that number is, it's a tiny percentage, everyone else is now inconvenienced, everyone else becomes uncomfortable. And what about heterosexual predators? Some guy, some voyeur who's going to say, great, I'm going to pretend to be a woman to get in the ladies' bathroom or locker room. There's no recourse. How are you going to distinguish him from the transgender person? All right, we'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I am speaking with Heather Garofalo. She is an ambassador for the Alliance Defending Freedom. She holds a master's degree in psychology from Marymount University in Virginia, married to her husband, Stephen, with three kids. Heather, we were talking about some of the inequalities, some of the problems of this bill that's being pushed in Charlotte. By the way, friends, to find out more, go to don'tdoitcharlotte.com. There's no apostrophes, just D-O-N-T, don'tdoitcharlotte.com. You can see exactly what the bill states. You can see exactly what the issues are. Everybody hearing my voice in our great stations in Greater Charlotte, please go there, sign the petition, see how you can get involved to make a difference. But let's go back to something. You've got, say, a 10-year-old girl who identifies as a boy. No one wants to see that kid bullied, no matter what's going on in their life, whether they're confused, whatever the issues are, no one wants to see them bullied. I mean, no one in their right mind, no caring parent. And all of us who have little kids, I've got grandkids, but if you've got younger kids, you always want to be teaching your kids, be respectful to everyone. If you see someone being picked on, be nice to that kid. But we want to teach that for everybody. You can teach that bullying is bad without teaching gay is good or transgenderism is good. Okay, but you raised a great point in the last segment. You've got a 10-year-old girl who identifies as a boy. Are her problems now going to disappear if she uses the boy's bathroom? The bullying that is being outcast, that's going to now go away for her if she does that?
Exactly. That is a condition of the heart and the mind, and that is not going to change. And the trouble with this ordinance is it actually fails the lesbian, gay, and transgender community because it is setting them up with a false hope that suddenly, if they enter the bathroom on the other side, that all males are going to embrace them, protect them, nurture them, and that they are going to feel accepted when, in fact, there can be a lot of trauma caused further. So, no, it does not solve the problem.
Now, there's one case. A woman goes into her fitness center. She's there in the locker room. A male comes in, a biological male. He's going to now get undressed in the locker room where they're going to get undressed around him. She goes, it was a Planet Fitness. She goes and complains, and they said, nothing we can do. In fact, she's the guilty party. Because, hey, we can't discriminate based on gender identity or gender expression. There is a college in Washington State. Here you've got a pool that's shared by the local high school, small college town, shared by the local high school. Some of the high school girls go in there. On the girls' side, they go on the sauna. On the girls' side, there's a biological male. He is legally female, but he's a biological male. According to police reports, she had her male genitalia exposed. Figure that out. When outraged parents complain to the school says nothing we can do because we don't discriminate based on gender identity. So this could be coming to a school, a locker room, a restaurant bathroom in the city of Charlotte.
Absolutely. And I think the challenge here is that the LGBT community will say there cannot be any indecent or unlawful exposure. But how will you measure that? How will you see that? So quickly these things happen. And from a psychological perspective, they are very traumatizing for our young children. If you don't have video cameras setting up in the bathroom, which of course you're not because you're infringing upon people's privacy, we cannot protect, we cannot measure, we cannot stop people and catch them in the act of exposing themselves every time. And then we're dealing with the repercussion of these children that at a young age have witnessed these types of events.
Yeah, and here's the other thing. Let's get away from the sexual predator thing. Although University of Toronto, they recently had to reconsider having co-ed showers. Because they found guys were in there. One guy was in there with his cell phone holding it up over the stalls to take pictures of the guy. Well, he's a college-age guy. What do you expect him to do? He's going to take advantage of it. But I was out with a family the other day that had a baby boy about a year old and then three adorable girls, maybe like 8, 10, 12 years old. At a certain point, a couple of girls had to go to the bathroom, and it was right within sight. So the mom and dad, here, just go right down there. They're going to walk down to the bathroom. Let's say you've got a guy, he's a really nice guy, he's a kind-hearted guy, he wouldn't hurt a fly, but he really believes he's a woman. For many years he believes he's a woman. He finds it liberating when he dresses as a woman, but he's obviously a male, okay? He's 60 years old, and he's obviously a male wearing a wig and a dress, and he's in that bathroom when the little girls go in there. Is it under any sense of fairness, fair, right, to impose his struggles on those girls? Well, where's he supposed to go? Well, that's his problem, not the rest of the world's problem. I don't want to seem heartless, but I mean, I was just thinking, they're little girls. What are you going to tell them? You're going to have to explain why the man is wearing a dress. And again, it's not just gender identity, but gender expression, which really, how is this quantified? Is there any way to quantify this? Is there any way to legally say, here's exactly what transgender is. Here exactly are the limits of gender identity, gender expression. Or is kind of the sky the limit? What do you think?
Well, and the problem that you mentioned is when they're looking to add this to the ordinance, there is no clear cut. There are many different definitions when it comes to sexual orientation, gender identity, gender expression. Is it who we're attracted to? Is it who we want to have a relationship with? Is it which body that we feel comfortable in? Even the experts within this community are not clear. So we're looking to introduce law that we are not clear about.
Yeah, and in a letter that is circulating for leaders to sign, one of the points that's made is that this is impossible to quantify. And there are quotes in this letter from Dr. Margaret Hagen. She's professor of psychological and brain sciences at Boston University. And she says, quote, transgenderism has no basis in science or law. And now we're going to make it a protected class, like being black. And I say to my black friends, hey, when did you come out as black? In other words, you can't compare that to who you're romantically attracted to or want to have sexual relations with. All right. Don't Do It Charlotte is the website to go to. I've got some clips from the Benham brothers that are really shocking about what happened at a city council meeting just a few days ago. Don'tDoItCharlotte.com. Share it with your friends. We need to get a message out. Before we talk about a conference taking place in Charlotte and some of the issues about real discrimination that could come against Christians because of this, in the name of anti-discrimination, it's going to produce whole new categories of people being discriminated against. Was this just the brainchild of leaders in Charlotte, or has there been outside influence from other gay activist organizations to try to push this through?
This is a national movement that's occurring, Dr. Brown. And what is happening here is, just as you mentioned, this is not about clarity. This is not about bringing protection. In fact, we have to ask ourselves, does this group really need to be protected? So far in the city of Charlotte, last year when this was proposed and this year, not one case has been brought to the city attorney for discrimination. As you mentioned earlier, there were egregious acts of discrimination against our African American brothers and sisters. They were not allowed to ride the city bus, or they were forced to the back. They were not allowed to attend certain hotels. They were not allowed in restaurants. They were not allowed in certain places. There have not been reports of our LGBT community not allowed or questioned when they get on a city bus, when they go into a restaurant, or when they go downtown to check into a hotel. So the question is, why are we adding confusion to an ordinance when the real question is, are they really the ones that need the protection here?
Mm. So we don't have a plague, an epidemic in the city of Charlotte where, for example, a taxi driver is going to pick someone up. You're not getting in my car because I think you're gay. Or a restaurateur, you can't sit here, gentlemen, because you look like a gay couple. We're kicking you out. I thought that Charlotte's known as a pretty gay-friendly city. You've got Bank of America and Wells Fargo that are very strong gay activists, and the mayor, you know, pro-gay activists, and the last mayor going to the gay pride event. I thought that Charlotte was known for being a gay-friendly city. Now we're being told that that Charlotte needs a bill because of all the LGBT discrimination. I guess the question is, where is it?
Exactly. Where is it? And what it speaks to is, with all the world views and all the world religions here, if not one single case has been presented to the city attorney, then what is the real issue here? And I had a chance to attend the forum Monday night, and as I sat beside several lovely lesbian and transgender women, really the theme that came out here was they want love and they want respect and they want unity. And so the question is, if their goal is love, respect, and unity, this is an ordinance that actually we have seen, going back to your point of HERO earlier in Houston, it divides the LGBT community because not everybody supports it, and it segregates them from our conservative Jewish, Islam, Christian, Roman Catholic businesses, because suddenly those business owners, what this ordinance is doing is elevating the LGBT community. It is giving special privileges to the Human Rights Campaign to pick at our conservative business owners.
Yeah, and let me just jump in. Friends, make no mistake about it. There is heavy outside influence. The Human Rights Campaign, which also helped get some of the people on the city council and helped back Mayor Jennifer Roberts getting elected, as I understand it, and they have been the ones counseling the city attorney. The city attorney has not gone to the Alliance Defending Freedom or Liberty Council or Beckett Fund or these others. Hasn't gone to them. Has gone to gay activists. It's an outrage.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, I've been giving you some bad news in the city of Charlotte, but there is some good news. Number one, Jesus is Lord. Number two, ultimately, the direction of the city is going to be determined by God's people taking action and doing what's right and living out godly, wholesome lives. And if there are examples of someone that was mistreated simply because they identified as gay, well, we want to identify that and stand with them. We want to stand against the mistreatment of any human being. But there is a conference taking place. In fact, I'll be speaking at it as well, and why the church should support Israel and the implications of that. But it is the Rise Up Conference taking place this Saturday in Charlotte, North Carolina. My guest, Heather Garofalo, ambassador for the Alliance Defending Freedom, is also helping with this conference. So what is happening on Saturday?
Yeah, the Rise Up Conference was birthed by Desiree and Patrick Miller. And the goal of this conference is to bring like-minded conservatives together to be empowered to get more involved in their communities, especially when we're talking about religious freedom, marriage, family, and sanctity of life. The goal here is to educate, motivate, and activate. We want to take back our city, state, and country to the moral truth that it has been founded upon.
All right. So at this conference, are people going to get equipped? Is it going to be practical as well as inspirational?
Absolutely. Some of the top speakers that are coming, Alliance Defending Freedom, will have legal counsel there. They'll have counsel for all pastors as to how they can protect their churches, their communities. The Benham Brothers will be giving their testimony. Melissa and Aaron Klein, who have been persecuted from Sweet Cakes.
They had $135,000 taken out of their bank accounts by the government.
Exactly.
And that was to pay for the alleged emotional damages suffered by a lesbian couple when the clients politely declined to make a gay wedding cake. Friends, this is what could be coming to Charlotte, North Carolina next. Go ahead.
And yet, how did they respond? They responded by giving the top 10 gay activists cakes and cards to tell them that they loved them.
Yep. And they get fined $135,000. Who else is going to be there?
Tammy Fitzgerald from our North Carolina Values Coalition. She is going to be talking about why we need a Religious Freedom Act in North Carolina and defunding Planned Parenthood. She is at the forefront of everything that goes on with advocating for religious freedom, sanctity of life, and marriage and family. In addition, the North Carolina Family Policy. Also, our parentalrights.org is going to be here. We have several homeschool coalitions. We will want to know our rights and policy and what is impacting our ability to homeschool our children. Dr. C.L. Gray, a physician in Western North Carolina, will be talking about Obamacare and worldview supporting it. Also, our Concerned Women for America, Sherry Miller, will be here. She will be talking about Sharia law. And there will be many more in the breakouts. I want to announce just now, two generous donors this week are allowing a special discount for all our listeners on the air right now. If you would take a moment to just write down rise-up2016.org, you can go to the website and register. If you write down, type in CLT promo, that's CLTPROMO, you actually will get a ticket half price for $15. In addition, we have a special for you. At lunchtime, Congressman Robert Pittenger is going to drop in. He was instrumental in freeing Pastor Saeed. He is going to give his testimony at lunchtime, so you are not going to want to miss this conference.
All right, so rise-up2016.org. This is where you register. It's 9 to 4 this Saturday, Charlotte, North Carolina. What's the promo code they enter?
CLT promo.
All right, CLT is in Charlotte. CLT promo. Get as many tickets as you want. It should be a great day. I know a number of the speakers. Just had the Benham brothers, they're dear friends of mine, speak at our Vision Banquet last week, and they knocked it out of the park. Hearing from the clients firsthand, that's going to be important. So rather than sitting around feeling helpless, Alliance Defense Fund telling you what you can do to make a difference, you can get involved, and you'll get to meet me there. I'll be speaking as well. All right, we've just got about 3 minutes, but when you talk about protecting pastors and rights and things like that, we're not just making things up. This is not Chicken Little thinking the sky is falling. There are cases across the country and in other countries as well where Christians are being discriminated against and taken to court and being fined and losing jobs simply because in good conscience they can't comply with gay activism or simply because they hold to biblical values. So what happened to Atlanta Fire Chief Kelvin Cochran, a man who had served his city with distinction for more than 30 years without ever having complaints come against him, that he was discriminatory or mistreated anyone? What happened to him in the city of Atlanta?
Absolutely. So to your point, he served his community faithfully for 34 years. He was declared by Obama to be in charge of the highest fire chief in operations concerning DHS and FEMA. And he was decorated in so many rewards. But what happened to him is that he is a man of faith. He wrote a men's devotional. In that 200-page devotional, there were only 4 pages on
marriage.
And it was
marriage. He wrote it for his church.
He wrote it for his church, yeah. For the men in his Bible study. There were only 4 pages on the definition of marriage being between one man and one woman. The book had been out for a year, but activists put
pressure.
And
he gave a copy to the mayor, too.
He gave a copy to Mayor Reed, and the activists pressured Mayor Reed into conducting a 30-day investigation. And after that 30 days, not one time did any person ever come forward. And Kelvin Cochran said, "It is my mission to faithfully serve with respect all members of my community." But he was fired. He was fired.
When he was suspended, he had to go to training, you know, sensitivity training. Comes back, he gets fired. Now here's what Charlottians also need to hear. This is very, very important. He has now taken the city of Atlanta to court because of damages, right? He was unjustly fired as the fire chief. And, of course, all the other junk that comes with it, being slandered and misrepresented and so on. The city tried to get the case thrown out. No, it's going forward. This could cost the city of Atlanta multiplied millions of dollars. This could come to Charlotte as well. When someone, a Christian, and I'm sure there are a ton more people who identify as people of faith in the city than who identify, say, as LGBT. Every person's important, but now you want to protect one class. You're now going to put the others in the crosshairs, quite literally, of potential discrimination. What happens now when the cases start to come against the city of Charlotte by a Christian who lost his or her job because they couldn't bow down to the goals of gay activism, or simply because they held to certain biblical views and principles, like Kelvin Cochran, and in their own free time distributed that and wrote about it, distributed that? Now they could be targets of discrimination, and there could be all kinds of lawsuits coming against the city of Charlotte. This is a mess. It is asking for trouble. It is absolutely heading in the wrong direction. And what's fascinating, and we have this in our letter, that the cities without these ordinances are far more prosperous, overall new jobs being created, than compared to the cities that have. The idea that this is going to be some economic cure-all, first, we don't need an economic cure-all. Secondly, the cities without these ordinances are doing just fine, and some of the cities that are doing the most poorly have them. All right, friends, go to rise-up2016.org. When you get your tickets, again, it's this Saturday, 9 to 4. It's a steal to get in all day for this price. Half price because of a generous donor. Type in Charlotte promo, CLT promo, and be sure to visit don'tdoitcharlotte.com. My bottom line today, friends, we've got no business pointing a finger, complaining about what others are doing if we ourselves don't take godly action to do what's right. You've got to hear what's happening in the city of Charlotte and an interview with Ted Cruz's father, Rafael Cruz.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I just had a fascinating 30-minute conversation with Heather Garofolo, who is an ambassador for the Alliance Defending Freedom. This is a nationwide coalition, actually worldwide coalition, of Christian attorneys giving sacrificially of their time to stand for righteousness and justice and fairness in community after community around America. Last year, you may remember that there was a push to get the bathroom bill pushed in the city of Charlotte that would render all public restrooms, locker rooms, gender neutral in effect. And the bill was defeated. It was a gay activist bill. It was pushed by the Human Rights Campaign from the outside. The city attorney was ridiculed, or I should say corrected, rebuked for his failure to get counsel from others, conservative Christian attorneys and others that could give counsel on the other side. The input was one-sided from gay activist organizations, and it was defeated, but now there is a mayor with strong gay activist sympathies. There are new board members. Human Rights Campaign helped push people through to that would be friendly towards this bill. And from what I've been told, and in fact, Heather, let me ask you this directly. We've just got a few more minutes with you. You were talking to me during one of the breaks about the voting in the city of Charlotte, that there were some good people, God-fearing candidates for mayor, for city council. How come they didn't get elected?
That's right. Edwin Peacock, John Powell for city council at large, only 8% of conservatives, while 30% of the LGBT community came out despite all the campaigning.
All right, so hang on. You're saying, so overall, the turnout's not massive, but this, you know, city council elections, you don't always see that larger turnout. But you're saying that 30% of the LGBT community, from what we know, came out to vote, all right? But only 8% of those who are known as conservative or slash conservative Christians came out to vote?
That's correct.
So what is the makeup of the city council now in terms of liberal conservative?
It is stacked in support of the LGBT community.
All right. Now, it was in the past basically 6-3 against the conservative Christian side. But if two people have been replaced,
it's 8-3 now.
Or is it 8-1?
We expect that there will be three.
Or there are 11 total. I'm sorry.
Yes.
Right. So it would have been, right, not 6-3, but it maybe would have been 7-4 or 8.
Exactly.
Okay. So it's slanted even more now.
Yes.
All right. And then a mayor who's very much committed to the gay activist cause. Now, look, they think it's the good thing. They think they're doing what's right. We can give many, many reasons that are detailed in a 6-7-page letter I've got sitting on my desk here, all the reasons why this is wrong and not right. Where can people go to get involved to make a difference?
People need to get involved. They can come to a conference that we're going to have this Saturday.
All right.
Called the Rise Up 2016 Conference. You can go to rise-up2016.org. You're going to learn here about all of the grassroots efforts that are taking place in the city of Charlotte and also statewide to really take back our country for religious freedom, marriage, family, sanctity of life, all of the moral values that this country was founded upon.
All right, and the Benham brothers will be speaking, Aaron and Melissa Klein, who were fined $135,000 by the government for politely saying that they could not make a cake for a lesbian couple. They'll be there. So friends, go to rise-up2016.org. It's this Saturday in Charlotte. A generous donor has put funds in so you can get tickets for half price, just $15 for the whole day for an adult, even lower price for students. To get the promo, go to rise-up2016.org, and when you order, type in CLT promo. CLT promo. Got that? Also, if you just want general information, if you can't be at the conference, don'tdoitcharlotte.org. D-O-N-T. Don'tdoitcharlotte.org. Get involved, friends. You have a voice. Use it.
Fire we want, for fire we please.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, listen, I want you to know what actually happened. I want you to know what happened in Charlotte, North Carolina, shamefully, this past Monday. Joey, grab our first four clips with my dear friends, the Benham Brothers. They put this on their Facebook page after attending the meeting Monday night, Charlotte City Council seeking to push through an aggressive and radical LGBT non-discrimination bill. It is not a needed bill. Number one, it will create more problems than it solves. Number two, and it will open up a Pandora's box of other issues. Number three, and in fact, it includes things that are impossible to quantify. By law, gender identity, gender expression, what exactly does that mean? How far does that go? And why does that get imposed on everyone else in the society? Last year, there were over 120 people, I think about 150 were scheduled to address the city council. The large majority were against the bill passing. It ended up almost sovereignly being defeated 6-5. That's a whole other story. But now an aggressive push to get it forward. Instead of voting in people that would have been God-fearing candidates on city council, instead what ends up happening is more activist voices or pro-activist voices are on the council. So rather than having a public discussion and public debate like you would expect, this is what takes place. We'll start with clip number one, as the Benham Brothers describe what happened this past Monday night.
We just got back from a forum put on by the Community Relations of Charlotte. Last year, the transgender bathroom bill was actually defeated. They're trying to push it again this year, except they didn't want a public vote. They didn't want a public outcry like they did last year. There was 110 speakers last year at city council, and most of them were against the ordinance. And of course, it was overturned. But now with a new mayor and with some new council members, they're trying to push this thing again. Except this year, what they did was something really crazy. They called in about 200 people. And they left it open. Anybody could come. And then they got four actors. And these actors were from an organization called XOXO
Productions.
Productions. And it's just filthy. Some
nasty.
Of the stuff.
Here, the problem was they were commissioned by the City Council of Charlotte. So they got our tax dollars. These guys did a play called Sex Toys, another one called Tampons. I mean, they do filthy things with the crowd. And yet we... Our tax dollars paid for these people to come in and represent our views, our community views.
And so here's what they did. I mean, I felt like I was in a third grade class. There's 200 of us sitting out there. Probably the group is about half people for the ordinance, half against it. And they got these four actors, and two of the actors were for the ordinance, two of the actors were against it. And they basically just acted. And then at the end, we were supposed to break up in groups of seven and talk about how we felt.
All right, so friends, this is not being made up. This was not a school. This was the city council meeting. So after these gay activists or gay activist-friendly actors then go through their skits, now we're going to talk about how we feel about this. This is how we feel. By the way, when I'm using that voice and referring to that, I'm not speaking about any individual or group. I'm speaking about the whole touchy-feely. Now we're going to make decisions for the whole city. We're going to make decisions about how a man dressed as a woman can come in the bathroom with your little daughters, and that's just fine because that's how he feels. And what about how the girls feel? What about how everybody else feels? What about the madness that this opens up in society? It is nothing less than social anarchy. Let's listen as they continue. Clip number two.
It's the exact same ordinance that's in Washington State that was used against Baronelle Stutzman, which put her out of business with her florist shop. It's the same ordinance that was used in Oregon against Aaron and Melissa Klein. They lost their bakery and they got fined $135,000. They lost everything. This is the ordinance that's actually coming to Charlotte. But one of the provisions of the ordinance, which is the worst part of it all, is that it opens up bathrooms and locker rooms. So for showers and toilets of any place of public accommodation.
All right. So please understand this. Baronelle Stutzman, a grandmother, florist, has a gay man that's been in her store many times over the years, comes in, tells her he's getting, quote, married. Could she do the floral arrangement? Here's a kindly older woman who loves the Lord. She said the hardest thing she ever did, she took his hand and said, I can't do that. She's a Christian. Of course you can't do that. I can't do that. And then they talk. She asked him who's going to walk you down the aisle. The whole thing, she just talks to him as an old friend. And, of course, there are plenty of other flowers she could refer him to. No problem. No, this is going to go to court. She loses her business over it. And on it goes. In my book, Outlasting the Gay Revolution, I have case after case after case after case. And that supplements what I had in The Queer Thing Happened to America with case after case after case after case just like this. Now, this could be set in motion in the city of Charlotte. Again, it is social madness and it is injustice, not justice. All right, let's hear what happened at the city council meeting. Let's hear more about this ordinance. Clip number three.
They base it on gender identity and gender expression. Now, you've got to understand the terms because gender expression is how you express your gender. Now, you may express it like you feel that your gender or your gender identity, which is what you feel. Gender expression is what how you express your feelings. So if your gender expression and identity is female today, well, then, by golly, you can go into the women's restroom. That is just crazy. That is just craziness. And the problem is, you know, we got into the group and I was listening to Jason. He was the one guy that was speaking reasonably in this group. And as he began to speak, there was another man standing beside him. And he goes, well, listen, I am afraid of discrimination. I am genuinely afraid of all of this that's going on. And so my question is, okay, well, have you been discriminated against? If you've been discriminated against, he was talking about being in a restaurant, did you complain to the restaurant owner? Did you then go to the district of attorney's office and file a complaint? Because assault cases, and assault is just a threat, it doesn't mean that you get hit, but if someone's threatening you or if you're feeling afraid, we have laws on the book that will protect you, and Christians like us and others in Charlotte, we will stand there to protect everyone because no one deserves to be mistreated for anything like that.
But in fact, you don't have this epidemic of cases all over Charlotte. I'm sure people are going to try to bring cases forth and say, look, this is what's happening. The fact is Charlotte's known as a gay-friendly city. And even the big companies, Bank of America and Wells Fargo, are famous or infamous, depending on your point of view, for their strong gay activism. And I've heard enough stories from employees at these banks about pressure that they're under because of pro-gay activist environment. Now you're going to have a situation where Christians can easily become a target. And, to repeat, who keeps the heterosexual predator out of the bathroom? The man who is a voyeur. The man who is a pervert. The man who wants to just be in a bathroom with women. The man who wants to look over a stall or hold a phone up or something like that and photograph some woman. The heterosexual predator. I'm not talking about a transgender person. But he now uses the law. You say it hasn't happened. It has happened. There are instances of this happening. There are documented instances of various abuses just like this. He's going to dress as a woman. He goes in. How do you tell him from the man who really believes he's a woman, who's not a sexual predator? How do you tell him apart from that person? Pray tell. All right, one more clip from the Benham brothers reporting on what happened. Clip number four.
We need to always be sensitive to all people, especially those that are really confused about their identities. I get that. But we do not need to create an ordinance that is going to discriminate and actually target Christian businesses. It's going to target women and children. If you live in Charlotte, please step up. Go to don'tdoitcharlotte.com. Don'tdoitcharlotte.com. You can sign the petition. You've got to let your voice be heard. February the 8th, the city council is going to meet and they're going to have their dinner and then meet and discuss all of what this forum came about from tonight, all of the information from the forum tonight. And then on February 22nd, more than likely they'll vote. As Christians, we need to be just like Martin Luther King Jr. said, we're not the master of the state. We're not the slave of the state. We are, as the church, the conscience of the state. So now is the time for us to be the conscience that says, no, you've gone too far, no farther. Let your voice be heard.
All right, do it. Go to don'tdoitcharlotte.com. There's no apostrophe, D-O-N-T, don'tdoitcharlotte.com. Find out exactly what's going on. Sign the petition. Get involved, all right? I'm holding in my hands a letter that is 8 pages long for the mayor and city council laying out the issues. Our children will be subject to social chaos in their schools with parents having no recourse against it. These laws allow men in women's bathrooms, open the door to heterosexual predators, and put women and children in danger. These laws violate the right to privacy. An unfair burden will be placed on employers and employees. The proposed changes are unconstitutional, open the door to widespread discrimination against Christians, Muslims, and could even be used to discriminate against gay business people. Again, examples, citations to back all of this up. The category of gender identification is completely unquantifiable. Sexual orientation cannot rightly be compared to ethnicity or skin color and should not be a distinct category in non-discrimination laws. The proposed changes could make the city of Charlotte liable for millions of dollars of lawsuits, and the proposed policy changes could unfairly harm women and the interests that federal laws like Title IX were intended to protect. The proposed changes open the door to an almost infinite number of new categories of aggrieved victims of discrimination. National studies indicate that states which do not have non-discrimination laws, including sexual orientation and gender identity, are suffering no ill effects economically. That's what this letter lays out in 8 pages. Get involved. Go to DontDoItCharlotte, DontDoItCharlotte.com.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I am thrilled to have on the air with me Rafael Cruz, the father of Senator Ted Cruz, presidential candidate Ted Cruz, winner of the Iowa caucus, Ted Cruz. Rafael Cruz has a book, A Time for Action. It is a call to empowered Christians that we must reignite the promise of America. Reverend Cruz, Rafael, great to have you on the broadcast with us today.
Dr. Brown, it's so good. Great to be with you. Always great to be with you.
Well, thank you, sir. We met a few months back. You were speaking in North Carolina. We had lunch together. That's when you asked me to prayerfully consider endorsing your son. I had never endorsed a candidate, but I felt that this was the right time to do so. And you told me something very powerful about how the decision was made for him to run. What happened that the day you gathered for prayer and decided that he should run for president?
Well, actually, prior to that, my son Ted and his family spent 6 months in prayer, you know, seeking God's will for this decision. But the day that the final green light came on, the whole family was together. It was in a Sunday. We were all at his church, First Baptist Church in Houston, Texas, including his senior staff. And after church service, we all gathered at the pastor's office. We were on our knees for 2 hours seeking God's will. And, you know, at the end of that time, a word came through his wife, Heidi. And the word came just saying, seek God's face, not God's hand. Mm. And I'll tell you, it was as if there was a cloud of the Holy Spirit filling that place. Some of us were weeping. And just Ted just looked up and said, Lord, here am I. Use me. I surrender to you, whatever you want. And it was as he felt that was a green light to move forward.
Mm. So he is not, you know him better than any of us, he is not then what you would call a career politician, correct?
Absolutely not. As a matter of fact, he has been calling the problems in Washington, the corrupt career politicians in both parties, which he calls the Washington cartel. It is because of that you see so many politicians in Washington that come against him, because they want to continue the gravy train. They don't want anything to change because they are in bed with the lobbies and the powers that be. And Ted wants to restore America back to the fundamental Judeo-Christian and constitutional principles that have made America the greatest country on the face of the earth. And those that want to keep the status quo don't want anything to change.
Mm. Now, we've heard, many of us have heard your story coming from Cuba, what you went through. When did Jesus come into your life, and how has that impacted your life and then your son's life?
Well, unfortunately, I didn't come to the Lord until I was 36 years old. Because of that, I lived a fast life. I was drinking way too much because of my alcohol. You know, I had an oil exploration company. I was doing business in the bar, meeting clients in the bar at lunch and then in the evening. And of course, that took a toll on my family. And late in 1974, I left my wife and son and went to Houston. This was December of 1974, and was there for about 3 months, 3.5 months. And then a colleague of mine invited me to a Bible study at his home. Well, I was alone in Houston, didn't have anything to do, so I went. Michael, I don't even know what the Bible study was about. Mm. But after the Bible study, they had a time of prayer, and every one of them shared prayer requests. What impressed me is they all had problems. There was a woman that talked about living with her son and her son beating her to get money for drugs. And yet she had a peace. All of them had a peace that I couldn't understand. It's that peace that the Bible calls a peace that surpasses all understanding. I certainly didn't have it, and I certainly wanted it. Mm. Well, as I left that Bible study, the lady of the house said, gave me a little booklet, the Four Spiritual Laws, and said, listen, why don't you read this little booklet, and could you come next week? So I went the next Monday. She asked me, what did you think of the booklet? Did you read it? And I said, yes, I read it, but it can't be that easy. Well, she didn't know how to answer me. They were new Christians. And instead of referring me to the man who led the Bible study, she said, listen, our pastor is going to be at our home tomorrow at 7 o'clock. Would you come? So I went the next evening, and I'll tell you, I was a scientist. I spent, Michael, 4 hours arguing with this pastor. I mean, I was just sure that I could just tear down all his excuses and tell him that all this Christianity was a bunch of hocus-pocus. Well, about 11 o'clock at night, and I just praised God that this man would not give up on me. After 4 hours of arguing, the last thing I asked this man is, well, let me ask you, Pastor Wiley, what about that man up in the mountains of Tibet who's never heard of Jesus? Well, very wisely, this pastor did not take that bait. Instead of chasing that rabbit, he looked me in the eye and he said, you know, to tell you the truth, I don't know about that man up in the mountains of Tibet who's never heard of Jesus, but you heard of Jesus. What's your excuse? Mm. You know, Michael, that statement just hit me like a sledgehammer. All of a sudden, the eyes of my understanding were open, and I just fell on my face, surrendered my life to Christ, and that revolutionized my life. The next weekend, I was baptized, and right after that, I got on a plane, went back to my wife and son, and asked my wife to forgive me. Well, she wasn't a Christian. She really didn't understand or believe, but she didn't want to raise our son Ted without a father, so she agreed for us to get together again. We moved to Houston, Texas, and actually the next 2 or 3 years were very difficult because I basically was devouring the Bible, but not paying much attention to my wife. I was at the church every time they had a meeting by myself. I only took my wife and son to church on Sunday, but the rest of the week I was in men's meetings and prayer meetings and visitations. My wife said, you traded the bar for the church, and she still felt alone. Praise God, I didn't do the same thing with my son. I began pouring the word of God into my son. Well, after a couple of years, my wife received the Lord while watching a Christian television program. Our communication was so poor, it took 2 weeks for her to tell me. But then when Ted was 8 years old, after I had been pouring the word of God into him every night for 4 years, he surrendered his life to Christ when he was 8 years old. And I'll tell you, I am so, so grateful that the Lord put me in front of that pastor that wouldn't give up on me and spend 4 hours so lovingly sharing the word of God with me and the love of Jesus Christ with me.
Yeah, and one thing I know from the time that we spent together, Raphael, your heart burns for Jesus, your heart burns for the church, and your heart burns for the nation. And as I've had the privilege of spending some time with your son and hearing him share about the Lord's work in his life, I have no question that he's the real deal in terms of he is in this because he loves God and he loves America and he believes he can make a difference. There are some charges that have come against him. There's controversy. I want you to tell our listeners, as you know Ted Cruz better than any of us, who this man really is. Raphael Cruz has a new book out, A Time for Action.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I am speaking with Rafael Cruz. You may know him as the father of Ted Cruz, presidential candidate and Senator Ted Cruz. Rafael has written a book, A Time for Action. Rafael is a man of God and a man of action. And Ted Cruz was criticized for saying, I'm a Christian first, I'm an American second, I'm a conservative third. But I can't think of any Christian who really is serious about his or her faith saying that they're an American first and a Christian second. Well, recently, Senator Cruz has come under attack as a Christian. Is he a man of integrity? Is he a liar? Is he nasty? Can he be trusted? So I have the privilege of speaking to Rafael Cruz in the midst of all the craziness of the campaign. Rafael, tell my listeners who your son really is. You've known him his entire life. You've watched his marriage with his wife, Heidi. You know him behind the scenes when no one else is watching. Who is this man really, and what makes him tick?
Well, as I was telling you a little earlier, I began pouring the Word of God into him when he was 4 years old, and he surrendered his life to Christ when he was 8. But politically, I tell you, he got his first impact in the political arena when he was 9. I was very involved with an organization called the Religious Roundtable. It was a Judeo-Christian organization that mobilized millions of people of faith to help elect whom I considered the greatest president since Abraham Lincoln, President Ronald Reagan. Every day at our dinner table, our conversation was about why we had to get rid of this progressive socialist Jimmy Carter and replace him with a constitutional conservative like Ronald Reagan. So my son Ted got a dose of conservative politics from a Christian worldview every day for a year when he was 9 years old.
Wow.
But the real impact on his life was when he was 13. As he was entering high school, we introduced him to an organization called the Free Enterprise Institute. So now Ted is reading Adam Smith and John Locke and von Mises and Hayek and Bastiat and Milton Friedman and the Federalist Papers and the Anti-Federalist Papers. Then this organization creates a group of 5 kids. They call them the Constitutional Corroborators. They hired a memory expert, and they taught these 5 kids, my son Ted was one of the 5, to memorize the U.S. Constitution. For the next 4 years, my son Ted gave approximately 80 speeches on free market economics and the Constitution. Before my son Ted left high school, he was passionate about the Constitution. He was passionate about the Declaration, about free markets, about limited government, about the rule of law. And that passion became like fire in his bones. And you know, Michael, the reason I know my son Ted Cruz will not compromise his principles in Washington is that fire is as alive today as it was over 30 years ago. My son is a man of truth. He's a man of integrity. He's a man you can trust. 2 things you can trust with Ted Cruz. Number 1, he will tell you the truth. And number 2, he will do exactly what he says he's going to do. He has done that 100% of the time. What you see is what you get. And I'll tell you what, he has a true servant spirit. He realizes that as a public servant, he is a servant of we the people. He wants to go to the Oval Office to be the servant to every American and to open up the opportunity for every American to achieve their American dream, not only for themselves, but for their children and their children's children.
Yeah, and listen, as I've spent time with you, heard your heart, the prayer that went into him even saying he was going to run for office, and then the time that I've heard him, the times I've spoken with him face to face, what became immediately clear to me was he's not in this for politics or for political gain. I'm sure there are other candidates with deep conviction as well, but that what was clear to me that he really believed that America's in a mess and that he wanted to give himself to make a difference. All right, we come back. Got one more opportunity to speak with Rafael Cruz, his new book, A Time for Action. When we come back, I want to ask Rafael Cruz, hey, what about the role of the church in America? Are we talking about a theocracy? Are we talking about taking over? What's the role of the church? And what could a godly president do to bring about change? My guest, Rafael Cruz, his book, A Time for Action.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I am speaking with Rafael Cruz, the father of presidential candidate and Senator Ted Cruz. Rafael and I met some months back, and it was Rafael who asked me to pray about endorsing Ted Cruz. And I said, listen, I have two essentials, two things that are non-negotiable to me. Number one, the person must be an impeccable moral conservative. They've got to be a moral conservative on issues of life and family. They've got to be a strong friend of Israel. Obviously, they have to be competent in all these other areas, but that's where I start. And secondly, they have to be willing to take on the establishment, because no matter who the candidate is, I was convinced that no matter how good a candidate they were, if they wouldn't take on the Republican and Democratic establishment, they will not be able to bring about change. The more I heard about Ted Cruz, the more I was convinced he was in my top two or three. The more I was convinced he could be a person to do it, hence my personal endorsement. On the radio show, we'll cover all issues fairly from every angle, but my personal endorsement was for Senator Ted Cruz, and that's why I said, yes, let's do it. And the more I spoke with Rafael, the more I heard his heart burning as well. Rafael, you told me a story about your son running for Senate in Texas. It didn't look like he had a chance at that time, and yet things happened quite astonishingly. What happened in Texas, and what makes you think they could happen nationally today?
Well, you know, when Ted started to run for Senate, he was at 2% in the polls. He was running against the Lieutenant Governor of Texas, who had been in office for 12 years. This man, very, very wealthy, he spent $35 million of attack ads against my son, Ted. 22 of those 35 millions came from his own pocket. But I'll tell you what Ted had. He created a grassroots of tens of thousands of volunteers, tens of thousands of people across the state that were going door to door. He was speaking to Tea Parties and 9-12 groups and homeschoolers and constitutional conservatives, and everywhere it was a grassroots campaign. And I'll tell you what, the more he talked to people and the more that his message got out, the more people came behind him. And he, in spite of this so well-known man that was running against him, he won that nomination by 14%. And he won the general by 16%.
What about the notion, though, that he's too conservative to be elected by the Americans, that he could potentially win the Republican nomination? He's got the great ground game. He's got a good history as a committed conservative, etc. But there's no way he could win a national election. What do you say to that?
Well, I'll tell you what. Those who think that way, they don't understand our history. Look at our history over the last 40 years. Every time we've had a middle-of-the-road, mushy moderate that has been running against the Democrats, we have lost. Mm-hmm. The thing that Ronald Reagan said, don't paint in pale colors, paint in bold colors, not pale pastels. You know, they despise Ronald Reagan, and they said the same thing about Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan is unelectable. He's a right-wing zealot. Well, Ronald Reagan not only won, he won by an overwhelming sweep both times. 44 states voted for Ronald Reagan in 1980. 49 states voted for Ronald Reagan in 1984. The same thing is going to happen with Ted. We are seeing the Reagan coalition being put back. Conservatives, constitutional conservatives, Tea Party groups, homeschoolers, all classes, including Reagan Democrats, they are coming together behind Ted Cruz. He's truly putting together a coalition, libertarians, not only men, women, African-Americans, Hispanics. It's all coming together because people want to have a voice. People want a president that will be a president to every American, not a divide and conquer like you see with the Democratic Party. And people that want to not fundamentally destroy America, but restore America to the Judeo-Christian principles, to the constitutional principles that have made America the most unique country on the face of the earth. And we can do that. We did it in 1980 by mobilizing people of faith. We can do it again, Michael. And I think we're going to see that happen.
All right. Someone would say, a critic would say, it sounds like you're advocating a theocracy. It sounds like you're talking about Christians taking over and imposing their religion on America. I know that's not what you believe. I know that's not what your son believes. So what's the difference between what you're saying and imposing some kind of theocracy?
Well, we're not talking about a theocracy. We're talking about people who have been the background of America, the moral fiber of America, have been divorced from the political process. We have had over 50% of evangelicals not even voting. So you have a large percentage of the population that have been absent for the political process. All we are saying is we need everyone that has a desire to see America restored to become involved. Because if you're not involved, you don't even have a chance. You don't even have the right to complain. You become part of the problem instead of part of the solution. We are talking about restoring America back to the foundations. The Bible says, if the foundations be destroyed, what can the righteous do? Our foundations have been eroded by secular humanism, by just, like you were saying earlier, by just destroying the family, by basically the moral values that have made America great have been practically destroyed, and we have secularized America, and the new religion of America is secular humanism. Mm-hmm. And what we're seeing, for example, with Common Core, if we're seeing our children being brainwashed, not only with secular humanism, but with socialism, values clarification, situational ethics, where there are no moral values. And so that has caused a great deterioration of our moral fiber, of the foundations that have made America great. We need to go back to those principles that we know work, which is why America has been the bastion of freedom throughout the world for 200 years. We need to restore that foundation.
And what do you feel a godly president could do? If your son was elected with his deep faith, his wife Heidi, her deep faith, their deep moral convictions, obviously we're not electing him as a pastor or a priest or a pope, but what effect could a godly leader, a godly president have on America in your view?
Well, I think it boils down to this: character, integrity, trust. Those are the fundamental values that we want to portray. We better have someone we can trust. We have had too many politicians that lie all the time. And so nobody can trust someone that lies constantly. We need to have a man of trust, someone that you can believe that when they say something, they are going to do what they say. This is why I encourage people to don't listen to the rhetoric. Look at the record. Don't listen to what candidates say, because they will say what you want to hear. Instead, look at what they do and what they have done. You know, Michael, Jesus put it this way: you shall know them by their fruits. It's about time we do some fruit checking. Look at the record. Ted's record is impeccable. Only 100% of the time, he has done exactly what he promised his constituents he was going to do. You can trust that he will do what he promised America he will do. And as I said, it boils down to character, integrity. We need to bring integrity back to the Oval Office, that we can again be respected across the world. We need for Americans to have the feeling that they are giving their children a better America that they inherited. Right now, over 60% of Americans feel that their children are going to inherit a worse country than they had. That is unacceptable. We need to have every American feel the hope that they can achieve their dreams, not feel that, you know, things are on a down spiral. We can reverse that if we have someone whose interest is to serve we the people instead of self-serving. I think that's what you will get on a President Ted Cruz, someone who deeply cares for every America and who is a true servant of we the people.
Rafael, I appreciate your words, your heart, your passion. Rafael's new book, A Time for Action: Empowered Christians Must Reignite the Promise of America. And Raphael, I know above all, you're praying and you're lifting up Jesus. And I know you'd like everyone to be praying for Ted and Heidi and the kids. So let's be sure we do that. And let's pray. We can agree on this. God, your best for America. And God, Amen. Bring your church to repentance. Raphael, it's a joy to speak with you again. I look forward to seeing you face to face one of these days.
Well, I am sure we'll see each other in the next couple of weeks because I'm coming to South Carolina, and I'm sure I'll come up to North Carolina. Perhaps we can visit and maybe break some bread together, my brother.
I will go out of my way to make it happen with joy. It'll be a privilege.
Look forward to it.
God bless you.
God bless you. God bless each and every one of you listeners.
Thank you so much.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Hey, friends, welcome back to the Line of Fire. What a delight to talk to Senator Ted Cruz's dad, Raphael Cruz, a passionate man who really does love the Lord. And let me reiterate this. From everything I understand, not only was there no big impact of an announcement getting out to all the caucuses that Ben Carson dropped out and it was spread by the Cruz campaign, whatever information was given out was based on info from CNN. They got the first info, they get the second info. From what I've seen, someone in Marco Rubio's team, or not direct team, campaigning supporter, put out the word first, Ben Carson's getting out, spread the word, okay? But as soon as it was found out, as soon as Senator Cruz found out that misinformation was distributed, not just that Ben Carson was taking a break, that he'd be dropping out, then he apologized for it and fixed it and addressed it. In other words, there was no spreading of misinformation. God forbid, there was no willful spreading of misinformation. And from what I can tell, I was just reading here one account from someone who says this, I live in Iowa. I caucused. A young man named Evan. I don't know if young or old. Evan. I had several friends caucus. None of us heard anything about Carson dropping out until after the caucus. Our ballots had 14 names on them. Three candidates had dropped out by the time of the caucus. We were instructed to cross off those three names. Carson was not one of those names to cross off. Carson only spent $3.5 million in Iowa to get votes with very little ground game. Cruz spent $6 million with a very large established ground game. Trump spent $3.3 million with little ground game in Iowa and used being the media darling to carry him. Rubio spent $11 million and picked up his ground game towards the end. Many caucus sites in Iowa didn't have a Carson speaker at their site. My caucus had a Carson speaker and only got two votes. I assume the speaker and his wife, a friend of mine, said his location had a Carson speaker. A friend of mine said that his location had a Carson speaker, but Carson got zero. That's zero votes. The speaker for Carson even chose to vote for someone else. So this thing is being completely blown out of proportion. And as I just spoke with Raphael Cruz again off the air, said the same thing. Ted's energized by the attacks. He knows he's being attacked because he's in front, because he's making a difference. Let's go to the phones in Plano, Texas. Tracy, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hi, Dr. Brown. Thank you for having me on. I guess I have a question about how do you feel having a godly president fits into end-time prophecy. And because the United States, as you know, is not even mentioned in Revelation or Daniel anywhere, being a superpower, does this have a bearing on what God's plan is for America? And just overall, I guess, how do you feel that that would fit into everything that's happening now?
Yeah, so Tracy, let me ask you a question, and I really appreciate what you're raising and looking at it from a biblical perspective. Can you tell me, based on Scripture, exactly where we stand today? Can you tell me, based on Scripture, exactly where we stand? In other words, are there 5 years before Jesus returns, 10 years, 50 years? Can we we don't know, right?
No.
Okay, so how long have you been following the Lord, Tracy?
For quite some time.
Yeah, okay. So I came to faith 44 years ago. a little over 44 years. When I came to faith, I was told Jesus is coming real soon. It's any minute, you know, get ready. In fact, you know, I showed up one time. You're supposed to, it was either set the clocks ahead, set them back, whatever. I showed up at the church service the wrong time, and I was the only one there. And I thought, oh no, I missed the rapture. Jesus came and I missed the rapture. Well, that was a long time ago. I was 16 when I got saved. Our oldest granddaughter just turned 15. So we don't know exactly how much time we have left. We may have 5 years. We may have 50 years. We may have the greatest awakening in America's history right around the corner. We might see America's greatest days for 30 years, and then there might be a falling away. I mean, we don't know. So all we do know is to do what's right today. In other words, when you raise your kids, you don't think to yourself, well, there's going to be a great apostasy in the end, so I won't even bother teaching my kids about Jesus because they're all going to fall away. No, of course not. Or I won't even witness to my neighbor because it's going to get really dark before Jesus comes back, so why bother? No, what we know is we're alive today. We have an assignment today. And in my view, America is not fallen beyond recovery. We're a real mess. Things are in bad, bad shape. But I do believe there can be great awakening in the church. I believe that awakening can spread to society. And I believe with a godly president that we could really see a massive turnaround in our nation, one that could be a blessing to other nations in the world. And look, there are a few nations mentioned specifically in the Bible in terms of the end times. And of course, Israel's right in the middle of it. America's not mentioned by name. David Wilkerson once wrote, that's because America's going to be judged and will be destroyed and will be no more. It could be that America's not mentioned just because it doesn't play a prominent role with Israel. Or it could be because God's not giving us all that information and just telling us how to live. But all I know is what to do today, and that's to pray. That's to live a godly life. That's to get involved. Look, I was terribly grieved by some of the leadership of President Obama, and I have no right complaining. Well, we shouldn't complain, but I have no right raising an issue if I didn't bother to get involved, if I didn't get informed about candidates, if I didn't vote. Well, then it's my problem. I opened the door to it. So I want to do what's right. I want to pray for godly candidates. I want to vote for godly candidates. Whether they're Republican, Democrat, secondary, it's who they are, it's what they stand for. Are they capable leaders? Will they point us in the right direction as a nation? And then the church has to do its part. So, you know, the president may be kind of the tip of the sword, but the church is the rest of the sword as far as if we're going to have a positive impact in a life-giving way. So I personally, I feel that America's in the balance, Tracy, and that we could literally have a shaking and awakening that would bring us into the greatest days that we ever saw. But it's not going to be easy, and it's not going to happen without a lot of pain along the way. So we pray, and we know there could be struggles, but we move forward. Hey, thank you so much for calling. Much, much appreciated. And this much we emphasize, Jesus is Lord. Hey, friends, I want to say again, if you are involved in the campaigns of other candidates, if you're involved in the Rubio campaign or the Trump campaign or the Carson campaign or any others, or the Clinton or Sanders campaign, and you want a rep from the campaign or one of the candidates themselves to join me on the air, I know they're super busy and their interview times are very strategic, but I'm happy to interview those from all different groups, okay, as long as it's legitimate candidates. I don't mean that you decided you're going to run for president of the universe tomorrow and you'd like to be on the show. Here's what you do. If you're going to run for president of the universe, we need endorsements from at least three different planets before we have you on. All right, fair enough? So if you can give us endorsements from at least three different planets, then be my guest, have at it, we'll have you on. Okay, little humor there. But what a great interview with Rafael Cruz. We'll do our best to get that out as widely as we can. That's Ted's dad. That's Ted Cruz's dad that you heard from. I think that should tell you something. Be sure to visit the website askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org. My bottom line today, you better believe that the person that we elect as president could make a real difference for good if that person is solid in the Lord and solid in morals.